The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Our next item contains adult themes and references to domestic abuse and may be triggering for some listeners. In 2023, Nicola Hannay gave up her anonymity to participate in the RTÉ documentary Taking Back Control. She shared her story of the horrific abuse she suffered while pregnant and fighting terminal cancer at the hands of her ex-partner, Paul Moody, who was a serving Garda at the time. He was found guilty of coercive control, the first person in the state convicted for this offence. He was sentenced to 3 years and 3 months in July of 2022. By sharing her story in her new book, which is called Stronger, What Didn't Kill Me, Made Me, Nicola hopes to empower other survivors and also to shed light on the realities of coercive control. Nicola, good morning and thank you for being with us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I've been reading your book, which has a brilliant title, Stronger, subtitled, What Didn't Kill Me, Made Me. Yeah. And that's the person you are today, on foot of all you went through. But reading the book, if you bring us back to the beginning, the kind of person you were a hairdresser, very vivacious, a business that suited you because chattiness is you.
Absolutely. I think that's definitely my speciality. I love chatting. I love getting to know people. And I think I'm a good communicator. I've learned that along the way through hairdressing that I can have conversations with all different personalities. I love people.
Yeah, and no matter what kind of a night you've had the night before on the town, as a young one I'm thinking of, in you go to work and you keep the chat going.
Absolutely. I think the clients love hearing about what you're up to, especially when women, before I have had a child, they're thinking, oh, tell me, make me jealous. You know, fun out there. You know, women like that have already settled down, and especially when you're 16, going out after work, having fun with your friends. All you're worried about is what you're going to wear. That's your the only problem you have at 16 and 17 years of age is what clothes you're going to wear on a Saturday night.
Now, we fast forward through that phase in your life because you were very successful. You had the little apartment bought with the encouragement of your mother and your little car, and you're very, very happy. There's no man particularly in your life at this point.
No. I was with somebody for a long time, actually, when I was 16 till I was 29. I was in a long relationship, nearly 30. So I was with one guy for a long, long time. So then I was single and I was just loving having fun with my friends. Probably done it the wrong way around. And I was out having fun and I was enjoying being single, yeah.
And how did Paul Moody come into your life?
Well, unfortunately then I became sick. I was single on my own and I found a lump and unfortunately the diagnosis wasn't great. And then I bet all odds, which was fantastic. They didn't give me...
You were a goner as far as the doctor was concerned. You had no hope. But you took matters into your own hands and fought it. What did you do?
What didn't I do? I done everything. Everything I could possibly do. I just researched everything there was to know. Half a tray of wheatgrass a day. I felt like a horse. The smell of it even juicing in my apartment was so awful, but it was so good for you. And actually,
and you had a whole support team who helped you get through this ritual where you're subjecting yourself to these various therapies that people told you would help you.
Yeah, when you're researching, you meet people that have already been through different situations or from different cancers. So yeah, juicing, natural medicine, healing, bioenergy. There's so many other alternative treatments also that you can be doing at the same time.
As doing the stuff that the
Absolutely.
Doctors are recommending. Anyway, you amazingly went for an examination, a scan, and it was gone.
Yeah.
It was
one of the best days of my life. Absolutely. There's no words how I can even express that feeling. Because as I say, like winning the lotto wouldn't compare to it because like no money at the time was going to give me back my health.
Yeah. Now, the reason you tell this is that this particular part of your life, the challenge with cancer, is kind of involved in the meeting with Paul Moody because someone told him that you'd had cancer.
That's right, yeah. He definitely wanted to find out any and all the information you can possibly find out.
You'd met on what, one of the
online apps? That's right. Yeah, we did.
So he was doing his researches on you, and there was a connection between your friend Niamh and...
That's right. His best friend, my friend, worked for him. So she had already been around him and knew him on some social nights out and stuff like that. He used to come into their salon, and he was a really funny, charming guy. You know, she'd already met him and thought he was a really nice guy. He seemed like a really nice guy.
And then he pulled this stunt where he said, it turned out he was saying it as a joke, that the Gardaí were investigating you for undeclared earnings. And as a way of trying to get him to back off, or get the Gardaí to back off, your friend says, well, look, she's been through a cancer ordeal. Please don't do that to her. And then he admits it's a joke.
Well, he basically was saying, you tell me all of the information, because she was obviously thinking, I've had enough stress the previous year. Like, what's going on? This is not my friend. This has to be a mistake here, you know? And then she ended up explaining, my friend has been sick. Like, this is wrong information. So, and ended up in that way telling him all of
too much about you.
Absolutely.
Because you would always like to divulge that information yourself to somebody. Yeah. If you were going to tell someone, you want to be the one telling it.
But she was obviously trying to say he made a mistake, not even knowing that he was already speaking to me. So he never ever made out to her that he had been talking to me or anything like that.
Anyway, you met him. It wasn't love at first sight. You kind of didn't really fancy him, but he was very courtly and very courteous and generous. Good at spending other people's money. There's one early incident in the book where he's buying drinks all around the place, but he's not paying for them. But anyway, you kind of got used to him.
Yeah, he had a really nice personality. He seemed to be a softie. He used to describe himself as this big teddy bear. And from the way he spoke about himself, that's what I was led to believe. You know, he acted that way. He was very romantic and a great cook and stuff like that. And
yeah, but
he knew the talk, yeah.
But where we begin to see the red flags, he won't leave you alone. You have a moment's peace. You might go home to your apartment, there he is. He has the candles lit, he has the bath run, and he may even have cooked a meal. But then it could turn.
Yeah. Yeah, after a while, you start seeing a different sign, you know, different sides of him. So...
You didn't answer your phone. Where were you?
Absolutely.
Who are you with? Today. Yeah, you're going out with the girls. Where are you going? And then you turn up at the bar. That kind of stuff.
It never ended. Like, it's crazy now. Like, looking back on it, it's like, it's just like a different world or a different life that I was in, where it's like, nobody could have told me how it would have ended. Nobody could have ever. I could have, from the guy I met
to where it's ended.
Like, there's nobody, and there's no girl out there that is looking, we're all looking for a fairy tale. I'm like every girl out there. You grow up, you think you're going to meet Prince Charm and you'll settle down and have a beautiful family. And that's all I've ever wanted all my life. Most girls do. So it's definitely not the fairy tale you read in a storybook.
But you were getting all the trappings of that fairy tale initially from him, until he became overly possessive about you and became downright nasty.
He was very nasty. Like, to the person who he portrays who he is, to the real person, when the mask slips, it's a completely different person. It's like...
You constantly make excuses for him when he behaved badly.
Well, it's not like you make excuses. He makes excuses for himself. And he makes you believe this. You know, he'd confuse you in your mind that you nearly think, oh God, did I do something wrong? Or did I upset him? Or... You know, he actually makes you confused that, remember, I've never been around someone like that. He's an expert in manipulating people. His job is, they're trained to break people in interviews and they know what they're doing. He's a master manipulator.
And this is where coercive control comes in.
Absolutely. As in, it's just, I think I met an expert where he wasn't just the typical guy that was a painter and decorator. This guy had all the power also because of his job. He was a guard. So to even use my phone, like, it was like somebody was in my mind all the time. He knew where I was. he knew who, if he was watching my apartment, and for anybody that would come to visit me, he could text me all their information, blackmailing me and threatening me that if I don't go back to him. Like, in every single person that visited me, he could just straight away get their information. So it was so scary.
Now, you had a child, and but you did not get married, which for which you thank the stars.
The biggest smile on my face, huh?
Yeah.
Most girls would be smiling for the opposite reason.
Yeah, but just when I said that to you, you burst into a beautiful smile when I said, but you didn't get married to him.
Yeah, as much as I used to be hard on myself. I used to, but I've done a lot of work on myself. And now I don't blame myself. Now I don't blame myself because he just has, he's just that type of person. And the only thing I know I did wrong was I loved him. And at times I felt sorry for him. And I believed sometimes people could change. Where I've learned from my mistakes, and I like to grow, I'm growing where I need to work on too. As in, sometimes you cannot fix everybody too.
Yeah.
Some people are unfixable. And I'd like other people out there to know that. We don't need projects. You know, we're not here to be mothers. We're here to look after your children.
Mother your children, not,
yeah,
not an adult.
We're here for a partner and a team. I'm not here to fix anybody. And I have learned that along the way. I used to probably go around looking after people. I like to help people and stuff like that. And I think after being sick, maybe I looked at life a little bit differently also, because I think nobody had faith in me that I would survive also.
Now, so many battles to keep your head together with this guy who's so on, off, loving you, tormenting you. Then your previous battle with cancer, and then you come out of remission and you have cancer again.
Yeah. It was absolutely, like, it was just devastating that I honestly did not believe that God would give me this baby and that cancer would come back. I was 5 months into the pregnancy and I found a lump again.
And the idea that you'd be taken away from your baby perhaps so soon after giving birth, which would be just such an injustice.
Well, I didn't even think that. I thought as well, I was scared to what is the cancer doing to the baby?
Yeah,
I was actually more scared for the child. And I was terrified thinking, if this baby is in my body, like my bloodstream is going through the baby. Yeah. So I wasn't just afraid for me. I was afraid for both of us. And of course, I was never wanting to bring a child into the world for me, for its mother not to be here. Yeah. Like, to me, that's the worst thing that can happen to a child, to not have their mother.
And tell us what the attitude Paul had to the baby.
I would say he was a toy. I would say that baby gave him the authority over me. And by God, that he showed me how much control he had. I just remember feeling so powerless. I just remember in my own apartment and the threats were coming in. Like, even having to pull down my own blinds because he said you can see, he was telling me everything I was doing, even in my own apartment, watching me. So I was so afraid that the baby would even cry to let him know I'm in there, terrified what he was going to do to me. I had to live like that. Like, he would just turn up my door whenever he wants to intimidate me. And I was scared out of my mind, but I was afraid to tell anybody, to involve people, because he'd come after them. Like, I was literally on my own, so sick, I was actually dying. And I was reminding my brand new baby, and I couldn't tell other people because I knew, how could I risk jeopardising their livelihoods or lives? Because this man was a danger.
Now, there's one really disturbing moment, there's so many disturbing moments, but where you are due to go to get your drugs for an experimental drug trial. And he contrives to keep you late.
He's done everything. As in, you know, your partner is supposed to be supportive, and everything he did to me, like, I was supposed to start a new trial, like, and he just didn't turn up to take the baby. Like, this is a massive thing. You know, I've been
given an opportunity, a lifeline, yeah.
So he's just texting me saying, sure, it's not going to work. Like, there's only 2% chance trials work, and that's me. But texting in a different way to let me know. But he's been very clever for the courts, but let me know. You're wasting your time, you're dying. Like, the messages that would come through when I'm sitting in a chemo ward. Like, don't worry, I have a new mother lined up for the child already. You know, you're dying. Just accept you're dying. I will not bring the baby to visit you even when you're in the hospice. And I'm sitting in a chemo ward trying to fight for my life. And this is Christmas time. And this man is, you're sitting there and you're watching other partners being so kind to their wives. And at times he used to pretend to do that. Because yeah. I actually nearly was delighted when COVID came in, because he couldn't come to the hospital. It was the only space I could get to be free from this man. And then hours of having chemo was like heaven to me, to actually be able to go into a hospital on my own.
Imagine that, that your peace was only when you were getting chemo. It's shocking, really.
And that wasn't even peace, because the messages continued to come.
How did it all end up? I mean, how did you make your break for freedom?
I feel cancer was the excuse for me to start going to a therapist. I started going to this fantastic therapist, Catherine. And that was the turning point. I remember my friend saying, we can't do this on our own, because I'd started to just tell her little tiny things, not all of it. Yeah. Couldn't tell anybody all of it. And she was like, this is too big for us. We need professionals. Because I said to her, if I don't get out of this, I remember lying on the sofa, so sick and ill. I knew I was dying. And I said to her, if I don't get help somewhere, I know I'm dying. And that was the stepping stone to, I went to Catherine. And then I start doing the GoFundMe for Bangkok, because I knew, like, the treatment was failing here. The cancer was spreading also, and the treatment wasn't working. So I knew if I don't get out now, it's going to be too late and there's no point in going.
So you set up a GoFundMe page and you got to Bangkok, and the result was very positive.
Oh, that saved my life. Like, that saved my life. And trust me, like, the hospitals here are absolutely outstanding, the treatments. It was just unfortunate. My body was given up. But the different thing what they do is they actually build your whole immune system at the same time as they're targeting just a tumour. So there's so many different treatments over there. So I'm lucky, and I'm just very, very lucky that I think going away there, they work with your head and they give you so much hope. So I feel like it's the whole thing of what they're doing, body, mind, spirit, soul. And fate, they teach you fate, and they give you counselling and therapy. They give you all of the whole thing that nearly you need when you're sick with cancer, especially if you're dying. You know, you need a lot of help and support.
Well, you didn't die. You're here with me, delighted to say. But, you know, finishing up, finally bringing justice to Paul Moody. How difficult was that?
Like, that was horrendous. Like, to me, it was something I had to do for peace. It was never something I wanted. I would have loved them just to move on. Like,
emigrate, ideally.
Yeah, that would have been amazing. But as well, like, I knew wherever girl that he was going to move on next to. Like, I don't think I could ever, I couldn't have just, I knew he wouldn't have let me go. No matter what woman came into his life, he was never letting me go. He was never going to move on. And this man was a danger to society. So he still is, I know. He still has no remorse. Like, he has no remorse. He's just so angry the day of the sentencing. He was just so angry because he got caught.
And will be out, or if not already out, to maybe do it all again.
Absolutely. It's scary and it's very sad, because he's such an expert at manipulating that it's sad, because there is vulnerable people out there. You know I was a strong lady, and I know he pulled the wool over my eyes, so I know how clever he is at this.
Well, the book is absolutely fabulous, I have to say. I mean, it's disturbing, and, you know, I can see as a reader the red flags that you kind of saw but you had to ignore them, you know, and not being able to share everything with your friends and your family was always going to make it much more difficult. But the book, as I say, it's an education as well as everything else, and it's brilliantly told. It's called Stronger, What Didn't Kill Me, Made Me. Nicola Haney, its author, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Thank you so much.
And if you've been affected by the interview, you can contact Women's Aid 24-hour national free phone helpline. It's 1-800-341-900 or visit womensaid.ie. Next up, Inside.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.